This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents World of Warcraft, Wolfheart. Written by Richard A. Knack and read by Scott Breck. Prologue. Northrend. Twin rows of straining, green-skinned warriors tugged on taut broad ropes as they dragged a colossal wheeled cage slowly up the wide ramp leading into the last of the ships. Despite Northrend's eternal winter, the muscular orcs sweated heavily from effort, their broad-jawed faces contorted with each new heave of the ropes. Guards stood alongside the ramp, torches in one hand, ready weapons in the other. With steely brown eyes, they watched not the workers, but rather the great covered cage. The cube-shaped structure towered over them, its outer covering consisting of a great tarp sewn from goatskin. There were no gaps in the tarp, no hint from the container as to just what the cargo was. But there was a clue, revealed simply in the fact that the orcs themselves maneuvered the cargo. Desolate as the port was, it did have work animals, such as the horned reptilian kodo beasts, strong creatures more than capable of taking the places of the struggling orcs. There was even a trio of mammoths, generally used for transporting several riders at once. Yet not only were those animals excluded from the effort, but they had been moved decidedly far from the vicinity of the docks. Even there they stirred anxiously, the kodo beasts flaring their nostrils and the mammoths waving their trunks as all the animals stared in the direction of the ships. With a tremendous howl, the winds abruptly picked up to storm strength. Weather in Northrend had only one consistent factor, that it was foul. But there were many levels of foul, and the docks shook as the waters of the cold sea suddenly churned with great waves. Ship hulls groaned as every vessel rocked hard. From deep within some of the ships there came horrendous roars and banging. On deck, crew members rushed to the hatches leading down to the holds. Stern veteran mariners and warriors looked anxious. The last ship also rocked, and the gangplank twisted. It dipped to one side, spilling several startled guards and throwing the workers into a tangle. The cage shifted. At the last moment, the orcs on the teetering ramp kept the container from falling. However, no sooner had they managed that than it began to shake from within. A roar identical to those emanating from the ships, but much deeper, echoed through the dank port. Something within began pulling at the tarp. Guards rushed up from the port. Those still astride the gangplank fought desperately to maintain their balance. One failed, instead tumbling into the chill waters between the dock and the ship. From the shoreline, the fleet captain, a one-eyed veteran mariner called Brilm, whose body bore numerous intricate tattoos marking his journeys, raced toward the side of the gangplank and shouted, "Get that cage straightened! Don't let it fall! Get those weapons ready! Where's the powder? If that cage is damaged!" The cage beneath the tangled tarp rattled. The dim illumination of the wind-blown torches was insufficient to reveal what was happening, but the nerve-scraping wrenching of metal gave Brilm enough warning. "Spears up front! Hurry, you offal! The right side of the cage!" Two guards, either more impetuous or more foolish than the rest, moved in closer. From his angle, Brilm could not make out everything that happened next, but he saw enough. The foremost orc prodded the cage with his spear. The next instant, something snagged his weapon and tugged both it and him through a tear in the tarp. As that happened, the second orc instinctively lunged forward to aid his vanishing comrade. Something thick darted through the tear. The orc was too slow to realize his danger. He was plucked from the gangplank as if weighing nothing. Before his fellows could reach him, the massive appendage crushed the guard's torso, flesh, bone, plate armor, and all. The gore splattered those farther back. The hand threw the limp, ruined body aside, then retreated into the covered cage. From within there immediately came a cry from the first warrior, apparently left alive for the moment. Orcs with long, thick spears quickly lunged toward the spot as Briln raced up to join them. Two guards thrust, but the captain knew that it was already too late. Shrieks that almost stopped him in his tracks echoed through the Northrend port. The utter fear in those cries could be felt as well as heard. There was little that could shake an orc's resolve, or even draw up in one anything resembling terror. But what had been captured at already so much cost was more than capable. A horrific, crushing sound punctuated the shrieks. The orcs near the opening stepped back as something liquid sprayed them. A ghastly stench immediately followed, filling their noses. "Spears! Spears!" Briln roared again as he neared. The captain looked up. The torchlight enabled him to see the rip in the tarp and the bent bars. Those bars had been forged strong. Even with all his might, the gargantuan beast had been unable to do more than pull the bars just a little farther apart. Unfortunately for the two guards, that had been quite sufficient. "Where's the powder?" Briln demanded to no one in particular. Another orc finally rushed up with a burlap sack the size of a thick fist. He also wore a coarse cloth over his mouth and nose and handed one just like it to Briln, who used the two strings attached to the piece to secure it to his own face. The mask was merely a precaution. Nothing from the sack should have ended up in either Brilne's nose or mouth, but there was no sense in taking unnecessary chances. The captain was tempted to let the other orc do the task, but then he seized the sack himself. From within the nearby cage, sickening, ripping sounds continued.
"Cover me!"
The captain positioned himself, then studied the gap carefully. Although he had lost the one eye years ago in battling Kalimdor against the Alliance forces commanded by the human Admiral Proudmore, Briln still prided himself on his expert aim. Taking a deep breath behind the cloth mask, the scarred orc tossed the pouch toward the gap. The wind gusted, and for a moment Briln was filled with fear that the sack would miss entirely. However, it just barely made the edge of the rip, then fell into the obscured cage. A moment later, the captain heard a small, soft thump. The beast within let out a distrusting rumble. There was the sound of chewing. A slight mist of powder exited the tear, but not enough to concern the orcs. The wind carried away what little escaped, dispersing it. Inside the covered cage, something heavy and moist dropped. Briln knew it to very likely be what was left of the guard. Despite that, the sound gave the captain more hope that his plan had succeeded. A confused grunt arose from the shrouded creature. Suddenly the cage shook harder. Inside, a huge form slammed against the bent bars. Heavy breathing arose near the tear in the tarp, but nothing could be made out clearly in the tear itself. The breathing became labored, exhausted. The orcs heard stumbling. Then there came a violent thud. The cage shuddered and almost slipped again. Only the strength of nearly two dozen struggling orcs kept that from happening. Briln and the others waited several tense moments, but there was no renewed movement or sound. With caution, the captain approached the covered cage. Becoming more daring, he prodded the tarp. Nothing happened. Briln exhaled in relief, then turned to the others.
"Load that thing aboard, then get those bars bent back and that hole covered with something. Better make sure that there's always a sack of that herb concoction the shaman gave us ready to sprinkle on the thing's food. We can't afford this on the seas.
The other orcs moved to follow his orders. The captain studied the silhouettes of the other ships. Each contained such a cage. The new war chief Garrosh had commanded that this venture be completed, regardless of the cost in seeing it done. Brynn and the others here had not questioned that cost either, for all would have readily perished for the legendary overlord of the Warsong Offensive. Garrosh's deeds were epic and retold over and over in the Horde. He was also the son of the late Grom Hellscream and had been an advisor to Thrall, the orc leader who had freed their people from captivity. Yes, no matter how many lives it had already cost and would likely cost by the time the fleet reached its destination, it was all worth it to Brynn and the others. The Horde was at last within grasp of its destiny. It had the vitality, the drive, that this altered Azeroth deserved. Those who had held power so long in the world had become decadent, too weak and soft. The Horde, and especially the orcs, would finally stake a claim on the more lush regions that it needed not only to survive, but finally to thrive, as it had long deserved. This recent cataclysm, so Garrosh had impressed upon his people, was the great sign that this was their day. The world had been torn asunder, and to survive meant to be able to adapt to its much transformed lands. The crew members finally had the last cage loaded. Brynn watched as they sealed the hull. They had a fair supply of the sleep powder in stock, and there were other threats that were supposed to keep the creatures in line. But the elder orc looked forward to the end of the journey. Aboard deck, his first mate saluted.
Everything secured, Captain. All set to sail on your word.
Get us going, then, Brynn growled. The sooner we get this cargo to Garrosh, the sooner it becomes the Alliance's trouble.
The other orc grunted agreement, then turned to bellow Brynn's command. In short order, the ship pulled away from the dock. The winds whirled madly, and thunder crashed. A storm was brewing, the last thing the fleet needed. Still, the captain thought it nothing compared to what the Horde's enemies would soon face. Brynn stared beyond the dark, swirling waters, imagining the fleet's destination, imagining what his cargo would do once Garrosh had it under his reins. And for a moment, Brynn almost pitied Ashenvale's defenders, almost pitied the Night Elves. But then, they were only Night Elves. Chapter 1. The Wolf. Tyrande Whisperwind knew that the world could never be mended. Deathwing, the great black dragon, had forever changed the face of all Azeroth in a manner even more terrifying in some ways than the Sundering, when the world's lone continent was savagely split apart. The High Priestess, who had survived that epic event some 10,000 years ago, had never imagined that she would have to live through anything so brutal again. To those few who might have been unfamiliar with her race, the Night Elf, her midnight blue hair falling below her shoulders, seemed barely more than 2 decades old, rather than 10,000 years. However, her glittering silver eyes were filled with the wisdom of so much experience. There were some very fine lines near those elegant eyes, but they were more the result of troubled times during the past 10 millennia than from age. Tyrande strode through the lush temple gardens, the centerpiece, though geographically more west of the center, of Darnassus, and composed of several islets of varying size, filled with the most exquisite of flora. The light of a full moon shone down upon the gardens, and with what appeared particular favor upon her. That it did so disturbed neither Tyranda nor any who happened by the High Priestess. After all, it was a normal sight, already familiar to those who knew the solemn figure. She had hoped that out here she would be better able to think, to come to some conclusion concerning the weighty matters upon her. As High Priestess, Tyranda generally sought guidance and peace from the goddess Elun, also called the Mother Moon, from a place of quiet meditation in the temple directly to the south. However, even the calm of the perpetually moonlit sanctum of the Sisterhood, the heart of Elun herself, some called it, had no longer proven enough. Thus, she had hoped the tranquil gardens might suffice where the temple had failed. But although the gardens in some ways embodied the spirit of the Mother Moon even more than the temple, it was not enough to calm the High Priestess this night. Tyranda could not keep from constantly worrying about the upcoming summit. The time of the gathering was fast approaching, and already she and the arch-druid Malfurion Stormrage, her co-ruler and mate, wondered whether the event would prove worth anything at all. The Alliance faced a revitalized horde, now led not by the seemingly conflicted Thrall, who might have kept the peace for the sake of both sides, but rather by a new, much more ambitious war chief. Garrosh coveted the great forests of Ashenvale, though he would hardly stop with them, should they fall to his warriors. Despite, as an arch-druid, being more concerned with the wilds of Azeroth, and having absolutely no ambitions toward politics, Malfurion had done what he could to help maintain unity in the Alliance. However, Tyranda and Malfurion both knew that the Alliance's future did not and could not rely upon him. It was time for someone who could be more dedicated to that goal. That was thus one of the points of this summit Tyranda and Malfurion had put together, to see if through the talks someone would arise who could best guide those assembled forward in this new world. Of course, the gathering would not matter if not all the members were in attendance, and there were some of significance who still had not sent word of their participation. If they did not join, then no true accord would likely be acceptable. Among those Tyranda passed during her trek were other priestesses, all of whom bowed low in homage to her. They were clad in silver-white sleeveless robes similar to her own. Tyranda wore little ornamentation, needing none to mark her as High Priestess. All knew her. She acknowledged their greeting with a smile and a nod of her head, but so engrossed was she in her dark thoughts that, in truth, she forgot the encounters immediately after. The foul vision of Deathwing the Destroyer and what he had caused filled her mind, nearly overwhelming her. Her heart pounded and her blood raced as she imagined the continuing repercussions of his terrifying act. The summit must prove of benefit, Tyranda thought anxiously. This is the one opportunity we have to stave off the downfall of our world. If nothing comes of this, there will be no hope of attempting another gathering. It will be too late for all of us by then. But they had not received word from three of the major members of the Alliance, including Stormwind. And if Stormwind alone did not participate, then... Around her, the light of Elun grew blinding. The temple gardens vanished. Tyranda Whisperwind stumbled, then caught herself. Her eyes widened. New surroundings came into view, surroundings not at all even a part of Darnassus, the Night Elf capital. She now stood in a place far away, a place clearly on the mainland, on the continent of Kalimdor. Tyranda had been transported hundreds of miles in less than a single heartbeat. More shocking than that, she was surrounded by the unmistakable vision of war. The stench of wholesale death was familiar to her, and darkened mounds roughly the size and shape of bodies, mangled ones, were everywhere. What had once been pristine wilderness, a few ruined tree trunks marked that this had once been forest, had clearly been ravaged by previous battles here. As the High Priestess fought to regain her composure, it quickly dawned on her that she knew this place, this time, though whether from memory or because of Elune, it was impossible to say. She stood in the midst of Azeroth's first climactic struggle against the Burning Legion, a battle fought more than 10,000 years ago during the War of the Ancients. That war had culminated with the Sundering and the sinking of the Night Elf capital of Zinashari into the waters once housing her people's fount of power, the Well of Eternity. The Legion had sought the end of all life on Azeroth, and had come horribly close in achieving that monstrous goal, ironically with the help of the Night Elves' own queen. The demonic warriors surged forward, the fiery infernals at the vanguard. The massive constructs were followed by Fel'Guard and Fel'Hounds, the former towering armored warriors and the latter fearsome toothy beasts. Other demons added to their monumental numbers. The insidious army rushed over the landscape unhindered, contrary to what the Night Elf recalled of that history. Anything touched by the demons burst into the same horrific green flame that surrounded each of the monstrosities. Tyrande looked for those defenders she knew should be here, her own people, and the many fantastic allies who had gathered to prevent the destruction of Azeroth. However, they were nowhere to be seen. Nothing blocked the destructive forces. The land, the world, was doomed. But then a powerful howl shook the scene. The High Priestess felt her hopes instinctively rise. She felt she should know that howl, for it touched her very soul. The demons faltered, though only for a moment. As one, they let out a mighty roar themselves, then renewed their push forward. From the opposite direction, a great shadow stretched across the landscape. Tyrande followed it to its origin. The wolf, ancient, was gigantic, majestic, and so pure white that he all but gleamed. He towered over all else. The huge animal howled again, and this time countless other howls joined in from somewhere behind him. "Goldrin," Tyrande murmured. From the dawn of its reshaping by the mysterious Titans, Azeroth had been guarded by beings who were tied to the world as no other creatures could be. The dragons had been empowered by the Titans, but Azeroth itself gave rise to spirits and demigods, creatures eternal in nature yet capable of ultimate sacrifice. But not until the War of the Ancients had any of these protectors faced a threat as terrifying as the Burning Legion. Dragons had perished by the scores, and among the spirits and demigods there were many who fell in the final battle. One of those had been Goldrin. Yet this bloody scene before her was not exactly history. Tyrande finally understood that, though her natural instinct was to fear not only for her world, but also for the wolf seeking to protect it again. Elune had chosen this urgent scene to tell her something, though the High Priestess was at a loss as to what it might be. Was she to watch Goldrin sacrifice himself once more? Several demons neared the giant wolf, who growled his challenge to them. But as the attackers came upon him, with renewed cries, a vast pack of mortal wolves leapt from the emptiness behind Goldrin. They poured over the landscape, sleek-furred hunters already sizing up their individual prey. Though they were not as huge as most of the demons, they charged with ferocity and determination unparalleled. The two forces collided. The demons wielded blades, axes, savage teeth, claws, and more, and knew how to use all of them well. At first it seemed the wolves had only teeth and claws, but their dexterity and swiftness were unmatched. They darted among their sinister foes, snapping and slashing wherever there was an opening. Goldrin stood at the forefront. The huge wolf seized a Fel'Guard in his mouth and bit through. Green flames erupted as the beast let the fragments fall. At the same time, his claws crushed through another foe. two wolves brought down an axe-wielding enemy who had just cleaved in twain one of their brethren. The wolves tore the demon's arms off, then one took out the throat. However, other demons fell upon them, overwhelming the pair. Tyrande strained to join the battle, but could not move. She could only watch helplessly as more wolves perished, and even though they seemed to take more than their number in adversaries, that did little to assuage her fears and regrets for them. More and more demons focused on Goldrin, clearly aware that he was what guided the wolves. The demons tried to hack away at his limbs or drag him down so that they could cut his throat, but Goldrin shook off those near his paws, batting some away so hard that they crashed into their own comrades. In his savage jaws, the gigantic wolf plucked up one demon after another. Some he bit to pieces like the first, others he shook until the sheer force sent their body parts scattering. Goldrin barreled through the burning legion's ranks, his eager pack ever at his side. Bloody wolf carcasses and dismembered demon corpses already littered the battlefield, but the two sides' numbers appeared undiminished. Another wolf was chopped to pieces, and even more demons attacked Goldrin. Yet the enormous wolf was undaunted and continued to claw and bite one foe after another, leaving them piled three and four high in many places.
"Mother Moon, why do you show this to me?"
The High Priestess strained to leap to Goldrin's aid, but still could not do more than observe.
"Either let me join this struggle, or tell me the purpose of this endless slaughter, please."
But the fight went on without revelation, and worse matters suddenly took a dark turn for Goldrin. Harassed from all sides, the wolf could not fend off all his opponents. Demons struck him again and again, the growing number of wounds finally beginning to take their toll on the great ancient. One of the Felguard managed to climb atop the white wolf's back. The fiendish warrior, his eyes blazing green in anticipation, raised his weapon and struck hard at the center of the wolf's spine.
"No!"
Tyrande cried out, realizing what was about to happen. She was well aware of this dire event, though she had never known the details. Goldrin let out an anguished howl. His legs collapsed beneath him. Demons pushed at him in greater numbers. From somewhere in the madness to the ancient's right, a single dark brown wolf leapt up. Though the height should have been beyond his capabilities, the smaller wolf managed to reach not only Goldrin's back, but the demon who had so terribly wounded him as well. The Felguard turned just as the wolf neared. The demon attempted to slash at the newcomer, but the sleek, lupine form darted under the axe blade. The wolf then bore into the Felguard's legs, toppling his towering foe. Crashing against Goldrin's back, the demon lost his weapon. The Felguard sought to rise, but the wolf was already upon him. With one ferocious bite, the wolf tore out the demon's throat. As the corpse slipped off the side, the lesser wolf howled. He glanced down, then jumped. His leap was not without purpose, for he landed atop another demon harassing Goldrin, then tore out the chest of that one. Taking the lesser wolf's lead, others of the pack began rending those demons intent on Goldrin's destruction. The Burning Legion was at last forced to abandon the taking of the wolf ancient, and indeed was now pressed back. But it was too late for Goldrin. The ancient managed to push himself up and seize in his mouth a demon. He bit through the armor and sinew, spitting out the pieces. But then the wound took its toll. The ancient collapsed, crushing a few more of his enemies, and then lay unmoving. Again, as had happened more than 10,000 years before, Goldrin died. Yet, seemingly undaunted by this terrible loss, the dark brown wolf spearheaded the advance, pushing ahead of Goldrin's corpse. More and more of the lesser wolves joined their brother, now becoming avengers of their patron. One demonic warrior after another perished at the teeth and claws of the dark brown wolf. He howled between adversaries, his cry now as great as that of Goldrin. He seemed larger, too, more than twice the size of the others. The Burning Legion began to steer their efforts against him, but that seemed only to encourage the brown wolf. He took on every demon that attacked and left in his wake their tattered bodies. With so many demons much taller than him, the wolf even began jumping up on his hind legs in order to better snap at an arm or even a lowered head. His front claws slashed through armor and flesh as well as any blade. A helpless Tyrande let out another gasp. The more she stared at the valiant wolf, the more comfortable he seemed on two legs as opposed to four. The claws of one hand clamped together so tightly that they were as one, and also grew with each successive cut. This was different from what the High Priestess had heard had happened during the original battle, and she knew immediately that history had now slipped into something else. This was what Elune truly wished to reveal to her, though what it meant was yet a mystery to the Night Elf. The wolf's claws abruptly became a true greatsword, and the brown wolf fully a man, an armored warrior whose face the High Priestess could not make out from where she watched. The pack right behind him, he continued to challenge the Burning Legion, his sword thrust again and again. A startling new change followed, but this time among the demons. They transformed, becoming foes equally recognizable and far more imminent. Orcs. The transformation was swift and happened without notice by those involved. The wolves tore at the orcs as if they had always been the enemy. Felling another opponent, the shattered warrior raised his sword and let out a triumphant shout that still had hints of a lupine howl. The wolf pack surged again, but now they also stood on their hind legs, and their forepaws became hands wielding axes, maces, and other weapons. Like their leader, they were now human, albeit even more shadowed than he was. Disarray overtook the orcs. Their numbers dwindled. The lead warrior once again confidently shouted. And from behind the line of battle, in the direction the High Priestess knew the body of the Wolf Ancient lay, there came an answering howl. Tyrande turned her gaze there and beheld two Goldrins. The first was the corpse of the slain animal. The second was a glorious, translucent spirit who once more howled victory. But though the wolf spirit was like mist, there was something else within him, something more solid and somewhat familiar. With a start, the High Priestess realized that she was staring at the shadowed leader, despite the fact that he should have been at the forefront of the battle. Then, blinking, Tyrande noticed that she was watching the forefront. Both areas had suddenly blended together. Goldrin's ghostly countenance hovered over his champion, who seemed to grow taller yet. An orc wielding two axes swung at the champion. The warrior deflected the first axe, then swiftly did the same with the second. With a whirl of the sword, he then brought the blade between both axes and thrust it deep into the orc's chest. Blood spurted from the gaping wound as the champion pulled the weapon free. The orc gaped, staggered. His eyes glazed. The axes fell from his twitching fingers. The hulking orc dropped to his knees. His body shook, and blood flowed from his mouth, dribbling over his jaw and tusks. The shadowed hero took a step back. The orc fell forward, landing face first at his slayer's feet. As he perished, so too did the last of his comrades. The battle was over. The spectral Goldrin let out a new howl. Then he and the warrior fully blended together. At the same time, the shadowed champion at last turned his gaze toward Tyrande. His face was finally visible. And at that moment, the High Priestess returned to the temple gardens. Tyronda wavered briefly, then quickly regained her composure. There was no one else in sight. Perhaps coincidence, perhaps Elune's intention. Tyronda also suspected that not even a second had passed in the mortal world. The High Priestess did not question being suddenly thrust into the vision. Elune had clearly wished to relay something of such urgency to her that it could not wait. Understanding what it was, Tyronda was grateful, yet a bit confused. She realized that someone was approaching her. Smoothing her silver robes, the High Priestess met the gaze of one of General Chandris Feathermoon's aides. The sentinel looked a bit flushed, as if she had been running hard. The female sentinel, her torso, forearms, and legs protected by light armor, knelt with the utmost deference before Tyronda, not only because the High Priestess was their leader, but also because the general was Tyronda's adopted daughter. The warrior was armed with one of the favored weapons of the Night Elves, a triple-bladed moonglaive. Keeping her head down, the other Night Elf said, "The general knew that you would wish to see this immediately, High Priestess." The sentinel held forth a small parchment that bore Chandris's personal seal. Taking the missive and dismissing the aide, Tyronda broke the seal and read the contents. The message was short and to the point, as was the general's way. Word arrives that the King of Stormwind will be joining the summit. There was nothing more save Chandris's mark at the bottom. The news was significant in one great respect, in that if Stormwind was a part of the gathering, then the other holdouts would quickly send word of their coming as well. The High Priestess and Malfurion had been hoping that Stormwind would agree to be part, though of late they had been concerned that its ruler might instead decide the kingdom's fortunes were better without its troubled neighbors. But of even more significance to the High Priestess was the timing of this news. She knew that Chandris had only just received it herself a few minutes before, and that, as the general always did, Chandris had made certain that her beloved ruler and mother would share in that knowledge as swiftly as possible. Elune had intended for the vision to coincide with the arrival of the missive.
"So, Varian is coming," Tyronda murmured. "It all makes sense now. I should have seen it."
And the vision now became clear. The Night Elf had only had a glimpse of the face, but even then she had been certain that the shadowed champion resembled none other than King Varian Wrynn of Stormwind. Naturally, the Mother Moon had known, but could only give her High Priestess a sign when there was something that could actually be done with that knowledge.
"Varian Wrynn," she repeated, recalling so much about the king's troubled past in that name.
He had been a slave, a gladiator, a man with no memory of his true self. He had watched his kingdom fall and fought to take it back from none other than what had turned out to be the daughter of Deathwing in human guise. And during those terrible times, when Varian had lost his name and had been forced to fight for his life nearly every day for the pleasure of spectators, he had been given another name by those in attendance. A uniquely important name. He had been, and still was by many, called Logosh. Logosh, another name for the ghost wolf, Goldrin. The two cloaked travelers disembarked from the small boat. That they were night elves, like the majority of the inhabitants of Ruttheron village, was evidenced in their build and their ears, which shoved back the fabric of their deep hoods. Their faces remained in shadow. The port village was humble by night elf standards, but exceedingly fresh in appearance, for all the buildings were new. It was actually the second settlement by the name, the first destroyed by the sea during the cataclysm. The second most significant characteristic of the port, other than its three docks, was the hippogriff breeding area, where eggs of the astonishing winged creatures who acted as aerial transport for the Night Elves were meticulously cared for, and the young were raised. The most significant aspect of the island was something the pair of travelers had been viewing for quite some time. In fact, they had seen it from miles away on the mainland, just as anyone else in this region would have. Teldrassu was the name given for the island, but only as an afterthought. The island was only an extension of the true Teldrassil, a titanic tree filling most of the land and rising so high the top vanished in the clouds. Its branches were so vast that they dwarfed some kingdoms. The thick crown could have housed an entire civilization, and did. Indeed, Teldrassil was known as the second world tree. The first ancient Nordrassil still lived, but had yet to recover from the violence of the Third War, again against the Burning Legion, only a few years prior. While Nordrassil had provided immortality, good health, protection from the misuses of the Well of Eternity's magic, and an open path to the Emerald Dream, the Second World Tree had served mainly as the new home for the Night Elf race. Even then, Teldrassil had already had its share of troubles. The tree had been tainted by the evil of the Nightmare Lord through his puppet, the Archdruid Fandral Staghelm. That taint had spread to the flora and fauna upon Teldrassil, and only recently had the tree been cleansed. But as inspiring as the vast tree was to all who saw it, the newcomers almost appeared oblivious to its presence now. The taller of the traveling pair, male, with long silver hair spilling out from his hood, paused to eye with much interest the adult hippogriffs. The slighter and clearly female figure at his side coughed harshly and teetered against her companion. The male quickly turned his attention from the avian creatures and tightened his hold on her.
"The portal," he murmured. "It will be nearby and quicker. Just hold on. We are almost there. Hold on, please."
The female's hood briefly bobbed up and down.
"I will do my best. My husband."
Her reply was very weak, and by the stiffening of his form the male showed his grave concern for his mate. Guiding her forward, he searched for what neither had ever seen, but should have been readily identifiable. A sentinel officer noticed the pair. Her gaze swept over the concealing cloaks. Frowning, her glaive gripped at the ready, she confronted them.
"Welcome, visitors," she said. "May I ask from where you come?"
The male looked at her, his face briefly becoming visible. The sentinel's words trailed off, and her face flushed with shock.
"You!"
Without a word, the male led his mate past the stunned officer. As he did, that which he sought became visible through the buildings and the crowd.
"The portal," he murmured.
A stone path followed a gentle slope up to Teldrassil. At the base of the tree loomed a tall portal, a huge, shimmering mark in Darnassian script emanating from its side. Yet even as high as it stood, the magical entry was dwarfed by some of the great roots arcing down from Teldrassil. The portal was a magical, direct link to the city far, far above. Two sentinels were the only evident guards, but the male traveler knew that there were others hidden near, and, in addition, safety measures built into and around the structure. Undaunted, he led his mate toward the portal. The sentinels eyed him suspiciously. From behind the travelers came the officer's voice.
"Let them pass unhindered."
The guards did not question the command. The male traveler did not waste time turning to thank the officer. All that mattered was getting his mate to Darnassus, to help.
"Watch your footing," he whispered to her.
She managed a nod. They had succeeded in making it to the portal itself. His hopes rose.
"Almost there."
A fit of coughing overtook her. It became so brutal that he lost his grip on her. She fell to her knees, her hooded face nearly to the stone. He quickly retrieved her, but as he helped her straighten, the soft patter of liquid caught his ear. A small pool of blood decorated the area near where her face had hovered.
Not again.
Her hand, which held his, suddenly squeezed with the incredible strength of the truly fearful.
Husband.
She collapsed in his arms. The guards moved to assist, but he had no time for them. They might even suggest that he wait while they check on her condition. But in his harried thoughts, any second meant disaster, loss. His only hope was reaching the High Priestess. Gripping his slumped mate, the male lunged into the portal. Chapter 2. Incursion. Moving against the slight breeze passing through the forest, the long, thick branches from the nearby trees stretched down. The leafy appendages moved with utmost purpose toward the bearded figure they surrounded. He stared up at the oncoming branches and did nothing but smile. Malfurion's storm rage stood silent as leaves from the first branches caressed his face. Even among those of his calling, he was unique. At first it appeared that he was adorned with the marks of the great animals whose shapes those most versed in his calling could summon. Only closer inspection revealed that some of these attributes were a part of him, the results of his ties to Azeroth, and the many years his spirit had spent in the Emerald Dream. While his dream form had become more and more attuned to that other realm, his sleeping body, still bound to his spirit, had begun to take on elements of these powerful creatures. Thus the edges of his arms grew into the expansive gray wings of the Storm Crow. The Night Saber, its bond especially close to those of Malfurion's race, was marked by what were not boots, but the Archdruid's very feet. They now mimicked the look of the feline's mighty paws. In addition to all this, his kilt bore in front as decoration the curved teeth of the Night Saber, and his hands were clad in gloves ending in the claws of the bear. One mark that had nothing to do with beasts, and perhaps more with Malfurion in particular, was the blue bolts of lightning that crossed his torso from shoulder to opposing side of the waist. Smaller, complementing bolts darted from his elbow down his forearm. Storm Rage was not merely the Archdruid's surname. It was also a hint of the tremendous power at his command, power that he sought to use only when all other efforts failed. The ends of the branches shifted his long green hair, but artfully avoided that which most made the proud-featured Night Elf stand out from his brethren. Magnificent antlers, more than a good 2 feet in length, sprouted from his forehead. They were a sign of his deep ties to Azeroth and his Shando, his honored teacher, the demigod Cenarius, and also represented the form of the stag. Some of the stronger branches shifted under his arms. Then as gently as a parent lifting an infant, the branches took Malfurion up among the trees. The Archdruid opened his mind and touched the heart of Teldrassil. Malfurion studied its health and saw that there was no apparent taint left from the sinister grafting attached by the mad Archdruid Fandral Staghelm. Malfurion gave thanks for that. He had been against the creation of the Second World Tree, but it had become an integral part of Night Elf existence. Yet that it had become so had been the opposite intention of Fandral, who had first proposed the tree in Malfurion's absence. To the other Archdruid, Teldrassil had been only a means to a monstrous end, which thankfully had been averted. Despite the lack of any noticeable taint, Malfurion swore to keep monitoring the tree. There was still a pocket of the nightmare remaining in the Emerald Dream, and as long as any trace of that darkness existed, renewed corruption threatened Teldrassil and thus the Night Elf race. Still, satisfied as to the World Tree's present condition, Malfurion took a moment to survey his surroundings. A moon well, one of the sacred founts of water known for their mystical properties, stood not all that far from the Archdruid. He had chosen the Oracle Glade northeast of the city for what his senses indicated was its unique tie to the gargantuan tree in which it was nestled. Here the Archdruid felt he could best meditate and, using his spirit, or dream form, reach out to the Emerald Dream. The druids still traveled with their dream forms to the other realm, but did so with some new precautions. Malfurion had not taken long to return to that place, despite having been trapped there for years by the Nightmare Lord. He did not consider himself courageous for having made the choice. The Archdruid hoped to further study the Emerald Dream for any changes he might have missed earlier, and also use this particular journey to clear his mind of certain thoughts. As if to mock his hopes, a sharp twinge suddenly went through him. It was not the first he had felt of late, nor did he think it would be the last. Mortality was beginning to catch up with him. The Archdruid had witnessed the aging of comrades belonging to other races, but to experience it was admittedly not so simple a thing, even if his race was still much longer lived than humans or dwarves. Malfurion fought down a brief moment of petulance, of thinking that he was not supposed to grow old. The twinge had disrupted his thoughts. Trying to restore his calm, Malfurion focused deep into Teldrassil's being. He felt his center calming, seeking Teldrassil's touch to help him reach the point where he could separate his dream form from his body had proven correct after all. His body now lay nestled in the boughs, protected by the trees that were in their way an extension of the larger one upon which they grew. Malfurion's dream form rose above his still body. Ghostly and emerald in shading, it hovered for a moment.
Malfurion!
As if thrust by a terrible wind, the Archdruid's dream form flew back into his mortal shell. He knew who reached out to him, for she had a unique link to him.
Tyrande?
The Archdruid immediately responded. At an unspoken request by Malfurion, the branches were already lowering him to the ground.
Tyrande, what is it? Too much to be said now. Please, come.
The urgency in her tone was undeniable. The moment his feet touched the ground, Malfurion hurried on. But after a few steps, he found the pace too slow. Concentrating, the Archdruid leaned forward. His bones made crackling sounds as they shifted, and his skin rippled and sprouted fur. The Archdruid's face extended, the nose and mouth becoming part of a wide muzzle adorned with long whiskers. Malfurion's teeth grew and his eyes narrowed. His shape transformed, becoming a huge, dark cat akin to one of the saber-toothed felines the Night Elves used for mounts. Malfurion's pace increased tenfold and more. The sleek cat darted out of the glade. The short distance to Darnassus passed swiftly. Sentinels who saw him approaching wisely stepped aside, aware of who it was rushing to the city in such a form. The Archdruid's cat shape was a recognizable thing to the defenders of the city, who had witnessed its power in battle. Much of the city was divided into what were called terraces, where elements of Night Elf civilization concentrated. The warrior's terrace was already behind him, and that of the craftsman was already to his right. Malfurion scarcely noticed either, just as he paid little mind to the elegant and artistically formed gardens and lake that were the center of Darnassus. His focus was on the shining edifice to the south, the Temple of the Moon. But something did suddenly intrude on his concentration, an unsettling gathering of night elves. Malfurion smelled their anxiety, and that stirred his other feline emotions. He bared his great saber-like teeth and dug harder at the ground with his sharp claws as he turned to find out what was the cause. Even before he came to a halt, the Archdruid had resumed his true form. The night elves nearest had already scattered from the cat's path, and now they and others who had noticed Malfurion bowed in respect to the august figure. However, Malfurion paid them no mind, for he now knew what had so caught the throng's attention, and why from them there had radiated such a high level of anxiety. The hooded figure stumbled toward the same destination in which the archdruid had been heading, but his efforts were slowed incredibly by the terrible burden in his arms. The shape under the other travel cloak was clearly female, and also a night elf. Malfurion could not make out the male's visage, but the hood had slipped from the female's. The slack mouth was a grim enough sign. A sentinel tried to give aid to the female's companion, but the male shook the guard off. The sentinel retreated with an odd respect in both her expression and stance. The same sentinel glanced beyond the stricken figure to Malfurion. With some relief, she started,
"Archdruid, praise Elum!"
"Archdruid!"
The hooded male gasped out the word, as if it meant all the world to him. A sudden shock ran through Malfurion. He could not place the voice, but even though it was clearly changed by stress and other factors, it was one he should have known very well. Gingerly adjusting his precious burden, the male shifted enough to peer over his shoulder at Malfurion. The agony that gripped the male had made some distinct changes in the face. However, the archdruid still immediately recognized the night elf before him, even though it had been centuries since the latter had last been among their kind. Malfurion could scarcely believe his eyes. He had gradually come to the conclusion that accident or some other violent demise had taken the hooded figure long ago. The name escaped as a whisper of disbelief.
Gerard Shadowsong.
Haldrissa Woodshaper had been a sentinel since nearly the creation of that army. Although she had been born some centuries before its general Chandris, Haldrissa had recognized the skills in her leader and eagerly learned. She had thus risen up in the ranks, well earning her position as a commander. Narrow of face and with a persistently wrinkled brow, as if she were always deep in thought, Haldrissa had just prior to the cataclysm been promoted to overseeing night elf forces in Ashenvale. Although far from Teldrassil and Darnassus, Ashenvale, located in the northern half of the continent of Kalimdor and stretching across much of its width, was not only sacred to her people, but of significance to the preservation of their civilization. The Night Elves and their allies carefully harvested only select areas of the vast forests, making certain not to disturb nature any more than necessary. Haldrissa squinted as she peered into the forest ahead of her party. Like the others, she rode astride one of the muscular cats called nightsabers after their long, curved fangs. Both night elves and nightsabers were, as their names suggested, nocturnal creatures, but circumstance more and more demanded that they move about during the day, too. Most of the other races with which they dealt were diurnal, day-dwellers, which did not preclude their being active at night, which presented her with the most complicated and potentially deadly aspect of her role here. There had been no sign of nearby activity by the Horde, but Haldrissa knew better than to trust the orcs and their allies to stay in the eastern side. Bad enough that they had a foothold in Ashenvale at all.
"What do you see, Zanon?" she asked of the male night elf to her left.
He was not the most senior of her officers, but he was known for his sharp eyes, even among the sentinels.
"Anything amiss?"
Zanon leaned forward a moment, then replied,
"All clear to me, Commander."
No one else indicated otherwise. Haldrissa signaled the party to move on. The commander led a contingent of some 50 night elves on the way to inspect one of the foremost posts. Haldrissa made it a point to do regular inspections herself. Nothing kept post commanders on their toes better than the knowledge that she would be checking on them. The post was only another hour's ride. The reason for the halt had been what thus far appeared to be a lapse on the part of the officer in charge. Haldrissa insisted that guards be set up to face not only the directions from which the Horde could be expected to attack, but also those from which it could not. If Haldrissa could imagine successfully sneaking past a post